I'm more going to focus on the first part of this passage today, on the issue of following, but I will allude to some of the later parts as well. Follow me, and I will make you fish for people. And immediately they left and followed him, James and John, Simon and his brother. Immediately they called him, and they left everything and followed him. Now these can be held up as the ideal disciples, called and following immediately, leaving everything. Often in my context as a young Christian, this involved going to what we used to call the Bongo Bongos. If you really were a good follower, you went to one of the deepest, darkest places in the world. And that was what it meant to follow. After all, when I was a young Christian, the very first book that was given to me was a book called Sacrifice by Howard Ganess. Howard Ganess was the man who actually started InterVarsity in Canada in the late 1920s. As a university student in England, he felt a call to come to North America to start the same kind of student work amongst university students here that he had experienced in England. And this is how he got here. His friends sold their sporting equipment, and they raised enough money to buy him a one-way ticket to Canada. And they gave him a bear coat so he could handle the cold in Canada. And that was the image of following that I grew up with as a young believer. So you can imagine that a passage such as the one that we're looking at today was significant to me, because I would read it and look at it and wonder, am I that kind of a follower? Could I give up everything? Could I leave immediately? And what it actually led me to was joining the staff of InterVarsity for 30 years. So it obviously worked. Now, what I want to quote is somebody called Barbara Brown Taylor, because Barbara Brown Taylor looks at this passage and speaks into the lives of many of us who, in spite of perhaps having felt like we have given up a lot, we have been obedient, and we have followed, there has always been this slightly haunting sense of, is it enough? Has it been enough? Or have I not quite caught what following means? I, for example, was very clear right from the very beginning that the Bongo Bongos did not call me. I didn't like big insects. I didn't like being on my own. I didn't like heat. I didn't like humidity. And I felt no desire to go anywhere other than Canada. But there was always that little bit of a question in the back of my mind. Was that enough? Could I follow this example that I saw in this passage? Barbara Brown Taylor, in responding to the sense that these are the heroes of the faith that many of us have sought to model our lives on, says of them as heroes, nonsense. They are not heroes. There is nothing heroic about them. Jesus called them and they followed. There was no angst. There was no deep wrestling over whether they should leave their father, leave their nets, months of praying about this. They literally heard this voice from someone they had never met before, and they dropped everything and followed. And she would say that this is not a hero story, it's actually a miracle story. She ends her reflection by saying, if you ask me, this is not a hero story, this is about the one who called. It's not about our power to change our lives or to follow adequately. It's actually about God's power to call us. And is that not good news for all of us? Because I don't know about you, but I have felt most of my life that I've never quite been able to whip up enough pure energy to follow in the way that I thought God would want me to. I was always somehow slightly not there. But if it's about God's power to be at work in my life, then I can relax. I can take that burden off of my shoulders. You too can take that burden off of your shoulders. This is not about you somehow still whatever your age, wrestling with whether you have followed adequately. Is it enough to be in Christian work? Is it enough just to be in the choir? Probably not. Sorry. No, I'm kidding. Yes, it certainly is. Thank you. Bless you. Stay in the choir. Is it enough to be doing something like Ryan's doing? Well, actually, no, he should go to Africa or someplace. No, if this is about God's power to be at work in our lives, then none of those questions matter. God is the one who calls. God is the one who is at work in us. And we do not have to work up the energy to follow. Now, on to page 5. I'd like to make several other comments. I get ahead of myself and then I go, where am I? I'd like to make several other comments about this passage as well. One of the things that was very encouraging in reading this, in the calling of these four men, is it's important to understand that following is a team job. It's not a solo job. And I looked at that and I thought to myself, oh, thank goodness. I don't like working in isolation. I am so grateful that I'm part of a great team here. Jesus didn't do this on his own. He called people to work with him, to be with him. And I am very grateful for that. So if you think that following is this individual thing, it's not. It's about being part of a team. It's about being part of a community. We need each other. And following and being obedient to whatever God calls us to works much better if we are working together with each other and not alone. Next point that I'd like to make is that when Jesus calls them to fish for people, there can be a tendency in our evangelical culture to think that that is about numbers. Now, if you're an accountant, focus on numbers. We love it when you focus on numbers. But fishing for people is not number crunching. It's about loving people. It's about helping God change people's lives. And it's about liking people and caring for them and helping God change their lives. So it's not about counting numbers. If it was, I think we'd probably have a totem pole here or something that we could cut notches in so that we could say, this week, we influenced 25 people for God. That's not what it's about. This week, I loved one person. Boy, that's amazing. That's God at work in my life. So fishing for people is not about counting numbers. It's about loving people. And one of the things I love about this passage is you catch a glimpse of that when you hear that Jesus went in to Simon Peter's mother-in-law. We don't even know her name. Mother-in-law, complicated role to play in any culture. And yet, there is Jesus. She has a fever. It's not even like she has a death-defying illness. It's just a fever. It's not just a fever. It's someone in need. Doesn't matter whether we know her name or not, and yet Jesus cares for her. That's what fishing for people is about. Next thing I'd like to say about this passage is that it's clear that following is both immediate and long-term. And Peter, of course, is one of our best examples of that. There's this immediate response to God. And then there's the rest of the story. Who's the guy who used to say that? Was somebody on radio. The rest of the story. There's the rest of Peter's life. And as Amanda said to the children, following is a complicated business. And people who followed Jesus, Peter being one of my favorite examples, blew it. There's Peter up there saying to Jesus, "You are the Messiah." And then he turns around when Jesus talks about the need to suffer and tries to rebuke Jesus and says, "No, you shouldn't be talking about that." He didn't understand. There's Peter in the courtyard after Jesus has been arrested. He's afraid to say who he really is. Is Peter at the foot of the cross as Jesus is dying? Nope. There were women there. Does Peter believe Mary Magdalene when she comes and says he has risen again? Nope. Now, the good news is Jesus didn't give up on him. He kept persisting and persisting in this lifelong reshaping of his life and our lives. And I don't know about you, but when I hear that and think about that, I am so grateful because I know that I'm not there yet. This week, I went into Ryan. I'm in the midst of a difficult family situation, and Ryan, being Ryan, said, "How are you feeling about that?" I said, "I'm as mad as spit, and I'd like to nail my brother to a wall somewhere." And then I thought, oh, I'm preaching on Sunday. I shouldn't have those kind of thoughts. And Ryan very wisely said to me, "You might need to spend some time by yourself, kind of in a wilderness moment, where you actually pray and think about this." And I need to tell you, I actually took his advice, which I do occasionally. And I prayed, and I said, "God, I cannot do this without you. I am so angry at my brother, I could throttle him. I think he's been a schlep." But in an amazing way, as I prayed, and I'm not big on sort of God responding immediately, okay? That's not my life experience. But in a remarkable way, I felt like God somehow lifted something from me, that I could be at peace about who my brother was. Immediate and lifelong. And thank God for the lifelong. Now, I want to read you something from a book that I received for Christmas. It's Philip Yancey's book, What Good Is God? And what I want to read to you is about how God works in our lives and how God changes us and how God chooses the most unlikely people. And here we are, an unlikely collection of people who God has chosen. And this is from a trip that Yancey took to South Africa. Speaking like an Old Testament prophet, Bishop Tutu gives God the credit for the miracle of reconciliation. God does have a sense of humor. Who, in their right mind, could ever have imagined South Africa to be an example of anything but the most awfulness? Of how not to order a nation's relations and its governance. We South Africans were the unlikeliest lot, and that is precisely why God has chosen us. We cannot really claim much credit ourselves for what we have achieved. We were destined for perdition and were plucked out of total annihilation. We were a hopeless case if there ever was one. And yet God chose and has been at work reshaping, and it's going to take years, but God is at work. There was a lovely comment in here that Soweto Township, which was most famous for what? Riots, death, destruction, ugliness. Soweto Township has one street that, unlike anywhere else in the world, is known for two Nobel Peace Prize winners, Tutu and Nelson Mandela. God chooses, God works. Now, we often reassure ourselves here at FBC that following is not a call to do more or to feel more guilt, and I would heartily affirm that. However, I would want to remind myself, as well as all of us, that following God is a call to be changed, to think hard about what we can do, what we should do. And I know that most of us don't like that word "should," but there are some things that should change, that need to be changed. And they can be named simply by reminding ourselves that what we're called to is to love God and to love others. Can we? Should we do more? Of course. Will God help us do more? Of course. because we are being reshaped by God. Let me end with a quote that Jeremy sent me. It's from Tolkien, The Two Towers. And it's Sam and Frodo talking to each other. Sam says, folks in these stories had lots of chances of turning back. Only they didn't. They kept going because they were holding on to something. What are we holding on to, Sam? That there's something good in the world, Mr. Frodo, and it's worth fighting for. God calls us to hang on to good, and it's worth fighting for and trying to change so that there is more good. Amen.